there's a real clarity to what we do. Every decision we make is based on, you know, what's best for that guest experience. And I know it kind of sounds cliched and all that sort of stuff, but it's actually really easy to make decisions based on that.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. When we think of restaurants, we often think of the food and the service as the lure. But the beverage offering can be just as vital. More and more, we are seeing venues appearing where the beverage offering is as much the draw card as the food. Dan Clark is the co-owner of Brothwell's Bar and Grill, 1889 Enateca, and Adley Clark Fine Wines in Brisbane. Dan, how are you?
Very well, and thank you for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you on the show. You've got three pretty incredible, very different venues, but the drinks list is almost the draw card for these venues. Is that the intention?
Not really. I was thinking about this before. I was thinking best way to describe how I've arrived at where I am is actually just being driven by inquisitiveness and passion for things. So I think, particularly with Enateca, when we first started Enateca, that was a real focus for me to sort of introduce wines that I didn't think that guests would have seen before. And I got a real kick out of that. That was kind of the driving force. I wanted to have a Roman restaurant, but I also wanted to focus on things that I really got off on and I thought that guests, you know, would enjoy as well. So that's really how that evolved. And I think Adley Clark was kind of a stepping stone as well for that. I was introducing wines that I was thinking, wow, you know, this could go one of two ways. It could go everyone wants it or no one wants it and no one really understands it. And so it's been a really interesting evolution. And then the third part of the story is Rothwell's, which is it's actually full circle for me. It's an opportunity for me to go all the way back to when I started 25 years ago, what was important to me then. And it's still, you know, it's still current and it's still important as well. So, it was never really my intention to push, you know, the wine side of things as far as it went. But in saying that, I'm really proud of, you know, the three companies and what they've been able to, you know, deliver. So there you go. The answer is no, but I'm really glad that it's worked out that way.
Well, you mentioned 25 years ago and sort of for the full circle and returning to that. What were your thoughts then? And do you want to take us back there and tell us about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was really fortunate to be offered a job in a wine shop in Mayfair in London that my brother-in-law was running when we moved there just after I finished school, which would have been 1993. So, and I knew absolutely nothing about wine. I knew nothing. I was 18, you know, involved in what most 18-year-olds were, was going out drinking beer and being silly and all that sort of stuff. And this company that my brother-in-law worked for were called Threshers, and they had, I think they had hundreds of stores around the UK, but they had a really, really good training program. And that, you know, I think I'd been working there casually for maybe a couple of months, and the opportunity came up to go to one of these wet set courses. And that was basically the thing that set me off on my journey, which was, looking back on it now, I was thinking I knew absolutely nothing about wine. And then the wet set courses were basically about European wine. And then, yeah, I ended up knowing more about European wine than I did Australian wine. And that kind of, you know, thinking back on it now, that was, you know, an amazing way to start and probably, you know, steered me towards where I am now. So, there, 1993, a little shop in Shepherd's Market and in Mayfair in London, and I was a very naive but enthusiastic young man from Brisbane in the big city of London and learning all, you know, what it had to offer. So that's basically where it started.
You mentioned about what was important to you back then is important to you now. Tell us about this theory.
Yeah, the things that I was sort of cut my teeth on with those courses and what we used to sell in the shop were, you know, classic things like Champagne and Chablis and Bordeaux and Burgundy and Rhone and, you know, Germany. And I think, you know, when you first delve into that sort of thing, I think those big moments make a lasting impression. So when I first tasted Osvaltern or Chablis, I thought, wow, this is amazing. And I looking back on it now, I was really lucky that I had some really good mentors around me as well that were really into those things, and they could see that I was taking an interest in it and pushing, you know, and not pushing, but gently sort of saying, hey, maybe you should taste this, or maybe you should taste that, or maybe we should go to this tasting. So, yeah, I was incredibly lucky. So, you know, full circle coming to do the wine list at Rothwell's, those things are in my formative years, that, you know, they're really prevalent on the list at Rothwell's. And it's really funny that 25 years ago those things were popular, and they've sort of gone through, you know, peaks, troughs, and now they're all really, really popular again, which is great, because it kind of, you know, just says to me that, you know, greatness is, you know, people always chase that sort of thing, Grand Cru Chablis and great champagne, and I think it's great. Yeah, so that's really exciting for me. And, you know, working with just an entirely Italian wine list at Enoteca is amazing, and, you know, that's my passion. But I was always sort of hamstrung that I couldn't put on, you know, white Bordeaux or whatever it might be that I, you know, that I kind of drink at home, that, you know, and that Rothwell's is kind of an outlet for that passion as well. And it's been fun collecting all those wines over the last couple of years to put on that list. There's been something, you know, people always say, oh, you know, what a job you've got. And I always sort of play it down a little bit and go, oh, yeah, look, it's hard work like everything else. But the reality is that it's really fun. Like, you know, it's not hard work. It is genuinely fun finding vintages that you might have tasted 25 years ago that, you know, are still drinking really well, or, you know, so, yeah, still fun.
You mentioned 25 years ago and that sort of step into the industry. What's been some of the real important sort of moments in the first sort of decade of your career that sort of set you up for a path in hospitality?
There are a couple. There was, you know, that first course that I did when I was working at Threshers in Mayfair, the wet set course. That was just the framework of, you know, knowing what's what in Europe. And that was really important, that foundation of education. And then the first trip that we took to Italy, that was basically set my whole career path on the trajectory, and, you know, find myself where I am now. I went to Rome with my mother and my father and my sister, and I'd been working at the shop for a few months, and we went to a few restaurants and that sort of thing, and I just knew there and then that Italian wine was my thing, and I really enjoyed the people, and I enjoyed the stories, and I'm a bit of a history nerd, and I think that history coupled with, you know, the people that I'd met, that was a real clincher for me. So that was really important. And then sort of fast forward maybe, you know, 6 or 7 years when I was working for the Grape Group in Brisbane, we had an amazing group of people that worked for that company, and they were right at the forefront of great wine in Brisbane and Queensland. And, you know, the guy that was running the company at the time, Tim Kelly, who now owns the Wine Emporium, was a real mentor to me as well. And Robert Hill Smith used to have this Yolumba Museum tasting every 3 or 4 years, and I'd heard about it from the guys. They said, if you ever get an opportunity, go to this thing. Just jump at it. So it came up one year, and Tim Kelly couldn't go, and he said, oh, Dan, would you like to go? I said, oh, yeah, yes, please. So that actually turned out to be the real, marker in the sand for me too, as far as knowing what great wine was. Like, Robert Hill Smith's an incredibly intelligent, very, very generous guy, and he'd been buying wine, like, ridiculous wines, you know, for this tasting for years. Like things that you kind of think about now, like 1945 Mouton and just absolutely crazy ones that would be just completely unaffordable now. But he shared that with, you know, 20 or 30 industry professionals. And I still see people around traps now, and we talk about it. It's got to be 20 years ago, and so that was really important. I got to know what real great wine was, and then you can judge everything else based on that. So, yeah, I think I've still got my notes somewhere. I'll try and dig them out one day. But the wines in there now, I just, if you try to buy those wines that he had, like there was a five vintage vertical of Chateau Akem going back to 1893, and you know, just absolutely astronomical things. But you know, I think that we got to taste a Madeira from the 1700s. Like, let's think about it now. I think I try and do my best with, you know, showing the people that work in the restaurants and the wholesale company some great wine, but I can't compete with that. So, yeah, they're probably the two things that really stand out in my career in the early days for sure.
1889 Enoteca made a huge impact. Tell us about the creation of it and building a Roman restaurant in Brisbane and the building as well.
Yeah, Enoteca is a passion project. It really is. Like all those times that I've been to Rome for work or on holiday, and it's one of those cities, and you know, most people say it. It's, you know, the history's outside, and I really love that. I love the accessibility of it. I love the people. I love the food. And, you know, I just wanted to have something like that in Brisbane. And I don't think that at that time anyone was doing Cacio e Pepe or, you know, Bucatini alla Matriciana or anything like that. And I thought, well, this food is delicious. So any food that's delicious is going to, you know, strike a chord with someone. I just hope that it's, you know, enough people to make it work. So that's how that came to be. And the wine list was, you know, things that I've seen and drunk in Italy that weren't available in Australia. And I thought, well, you know, maybe this is an avenue for Adley Clark to import these things and see if anyone else wants it. And so, you know, that it was interesting to start to open those things and for people to try them. So if you think, you know, 10, 11, 12 years ago when we were, you know, we had Radicon and, you know, macerated orange wine that, you know, people traditionally turn their nose up at, people were really open to it. I think anyone that's, you know, interested in wine is happy to taste anything. So there was that whole natural wine revolution was going on at that time, so that it was a really exciting time to introduce, you know, different producers and, so that was really interesting. And the Cacio e Pepe and that sort of thing, that I look back on it now and I think it, you know, I'm not going to pat myself on the back, but I think like that long ago, as silly as it sounds now, you know, Cacio e Pepe and a glass of Radicon Robola Gialla was pretty cool. And I think, you know, Miffy Rigby came up one day and sat at the bar and that's what she had. And she said, this is amazing. Just, you know, I don't think anyone else is doing this. And I thought, well, you know what, that's a really, you know, that was a nice moment for us and really humbling. And, you know, to just sort of confirm that we were doing something that we were passionate about and the other people really got into. So, to go back one step, the building itself, it was built in 1889, and I'd always known that area of Woolloongabba from when I was a kid because it's across the road from the Gabba, the cricket ground. So it's a really interesting street that had never been developed because there was no real commercial value for developers to develop that. So most of the buildings in that area are heritage listed. So we were really lucky that we were putting something, you know, with a bit of history in a heritage building that just you know, was really seamless. Like you didn't have to work in character to a characterful environment, which was kind of looking back on it now, which was, you know, which is perfect. So, yeah, that's how that whole thing evolved. And, you know, we're still on that path as well. You know, just really good Roman food with terrific Italian wines. And, yeah, it's still really exciting now. Like it'll be 14 years on September the 11th this year. So, yeah, and it's interesting to see what the evolution of things too over those 14 years. Like we've pretty much stayed the same but try to remain relevant as well. But, yeah, to watch things that what opened 14 years ago to what's open now, it's kind of crazy. And it's actually really humbling that to think that, you know, our guests still really, really enjoy it. And I think that's a testament to the food and, you know, the guys that we've got taking care of the place as well.
How did Rothwell's come about?
Well, Rothwell's is a thing I've kind of had in the back of my mind for probably the last 6 or 7 years, like pre-COVID when we all used to travel and, you know, kind of took it for granted. I worked out very, very early on in COVID. The light bulb moment was that we got to have Christmas lunch at Gordon Ramsay's Savoy Grill, I think might have been 2018 Christmas. And we had such a great time. I had my mum and dad, my three daughters and my wife, and it was just like you couldn't have scripted a better Christmas day. It was just beautiful. The food was amazing. That room's got such such history and, you know, we were taken really well care of. And I was thinking, well, it'd be great to have something like that back home, you know, not as upmarket or anything like that, a little bit more accessible and a little bit more egalitarian. But I thought that just the beef Wellington, I thought it's such a great dish, but it's such a, you know, hard dish to nail that I'll have to find someone that is, you know, has those sort of skills and interest. And funny enough, Ben Russell, I've known Ben Russell for quite a long time through ARIA in Brisbane, and we always got on really, really well. And I said to him, must have been, God, the start of last year, there's a great space in Edward Street that's for lease. You know, I think this could be a great restaurant. It's a great position. It's a beautiful old building. Here's what I like. And even before I said Beef Wellington, Ben said, I reckon we should do Beef Wellington. And I went, there you go. All right, we're doing that. So that was, yeah, that was like a lightning bolt moment. And between the two of us, a lot of the restaurants in that sort of ilk, we both really enjoyed. So we, you know, when we were doing the menu, it was all based around classics and things that really inspired us, a bit like the wine list, that things that when we first started that were really important to us, like, for instance, the Nishwar salad on the menu. Ben was making that 20 years ago when he was working on boats in the Mediterranean. So it's got a bit of inspiration from different parts of our careers on that menu. And I think people, you know, have really warmed to it, you know, because it's genuine. It's not something that's contrived or, you know, it's not this, you know, oh, I think we can make lots of money doing this. It's genuinely something that we both are passionate about and love doing. So, yeah. And the other thing that, funny enough, tied all back together is that Luca Bricchi, who runs Rothwell's, he worked for me for a long time at Enoteca. And he, you know, being Italian, he loves taking care of people. And I know that sounds kind of schmummy, but that's you know, intrinsic to their culture is to take care of people. So we've got this kind of great, you know, team between the three of us. One's really into the food, one's really into the wine, and one's really into the guests, you know. So kind of that's why that works. So, yeah, that's been really exciting, and that's, you know, not been without its challenges either. Like, you know, we opened just after a lockdown and pre-floods and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, it's, as I said, it's not been without its challenges, but, the challenges aren't the patronage or the feedback from the guests, which is, you know, ultimately what it's about.
You've been a big part of Brisbane's food evolution over the last couple of decades. How have you seen it grow?
It's been amazing. It's been amazing. I have a bit to do with Philip Johnson from Echo. We actually, funny enough, we go to the gym together. So we can't get away from restaurants anytime we ever talk. But he was a real inspiration for me as well. And it's actually really great to know him on a personal level, and anything that I, you know, I have no idea about something or you know, want his feedback or whatever it might be. I really look up to Philip. I think he's a terrific guy. He's a great chef, and he was the guy that really you know, highlighted that you can have a really great restaurant in Brisbane. So, you know, Echo won Gourmet Traveller Restaurant of the Year. I think it might have been like late 90s or mid 90s. Like, it's a long time ago, and that for Brisbane was a really big deal, because, you know, he, where he was too, at the end of Adelaide Street, was basically no man's land. So he was in no man's land. He was Australia's best restaurant, and he was the most humble, you know, down-to-earth guy. I thought, that's, you know, you want to base yourself on anyone or anything, you know, Philip was the guy. So, and then I think, you know, Brisbane was always centered around the river. So you had a lot of institutions like Il Centro and Cha 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 and those big seat restaurants. So, you know, Andy Georges from Il Centro was another guy that I had a bit to do with as well. And I always really looked up to him as well, because he just had the most loyal following. Every guest loved Andy, and Andy made everyone feel really special and really welcome. And, you know, so that maybe subconsciously that was, you know, that part of the service side that, you know, we really aspire to came from Andy as well. So there was that. And then after that, we, you know, Enoteca won Australia's Best Wine List. Was the first time that, you know, a Brisbane restaurant had ever won that award, which was amazing. I had absolutely no expectation or, you know, thought, we were vaguely a chance of winning, and the guys from Gourmet Traveller said, "Oh, come down to Melbourne and, you know, you'll have a great night. We're going to the Flower Drum and we'll have a few drinks and it'll be great." And I thought, well, you know what? There are a lot of people there that I really like and we can have a good time. And yeah, we ended up winning it, which was just amazing. Like, as I said, I had absolutely no expectations or, you know, I was just doing something that I really was passionate about and really loved doing. And so that was amazing. But even, you know, the year after it was, Simon Hill's Spanish restaurant ended up winning Australia's Best Restaurant. So two back-to-back years, that was a real feather in Brisbane's cap for sure. And then probably I think the last sort of 5 years have been really interesting. I had a lot of younger guys come into the market with Yoko and Greca, and, you know, yeah, Jono's done a really great job with those. And then you got Ty, you know, doing his things with Same. And so there's some real vibrancy to it as well. So I think at the moment it's a really good mix of different offerings and different operators with different philosophies. And so, yeah, I think it's about as interesting as it's ever been for guests, which is great, because, you know, you can go to a lot of restaurants and have a really good time, whereas I think previously that it was a bit harder. You know, you had, you know, really good operators like Paolo Biscaro at Beccafino and Alex at Julius, who came from, you know, hospitality backgrounds in Melbourne that worked for great guys like, you know, Maurice Tazzini. And so there's that kind of school. And then, you know, as I said, the Sydney school with Jono and, you know, Greca and that sort of thing. And so, yeah, I think at the moment it's really interesting. And I think, you know, the Olympics coming up in 2032 have really upped the ante for people to come into Brisbane and, you know, try and basically take a share of it. So that's probably the next thing. And we're seeing that at the moment with, you know, Eagle Street Pier being demolished and redone with lots of restaurants. And then we've got the casino precinct opening in the next year or whatever it may be. So, yeah, it's a really interesting time for Brisbane diners. And as I said, I think everyone's really up their game to make sure that, you know, if diners dine in their restaurants, that they have a good time. Yeah.
Brisbane's climate is vastly different to that of other centres like Melbourne or Sydney. Does that speak to the sort of beverage and food offering in regards to restaurants? Is the climate something that affects what you do?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Absolutely. I think it's really funny that, you know, everyone in Brisbane's just used to being hot and sweaty. You know, the humidity over the last, because it's been raining so much, it's been ridiculous. Summer was really sticky. And, you know, I've lived here most of my life, and I said to my wife, this is almost unbearable. It's like living in the tropics. You know, we're in the subtropics. We don't expect that. But, yeah, I think a lot of the food offerings and definitely the beverage offerings have been a lot more thoughtful. Definitely, you know, to cater to that being light, bright, you know, not as heavy. That's definitely a consideration that people are really, you know, tying into. And I think, you know, on the flip side of that, people in Brisbane love to get dressed up in warm clothes for whatever it might be those 3 months of the year. So, you know, the more cozy sort of venues where you can pretend that you're in, you know, London or New York or Melbourne or whatever is kind of it's a novelty for Brisbane as well. So it's kind of funny. You watch that, you know, spring, summer menus, you know, everything's light and bright. And then as soon as the weather changes just slightly, everyone comes out, you know, expecting, you know, ossobuco and, you know, all these really rich and decadent and heavy, you know, hearty sort of things. So, yeah, but the obviously, you know, the majority of the year it's hot. So that's how you want to eat light, bright and fresh. So, you know, that's why seafood's so popular in Queensland as well. Like, you know, on our doorstep we've got some of the most amazing seafood in Australia. So, you know, that's really prevalent on those spring and summer menus for sure.
The last 2 years have had their challenges for everyone on the planet and those in the hospitality sector. But how have you come out of that? Do you approach what you do a bit differently as a result of what's happened?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I think, you know, that just the constant being on guard of things can change at the drop of a hat has been, it's a good skill to have, but I think, you know, that's really personally really worn me down. Like, you constantly have to think, okay, that's happening. How do we deal with that? How do we make that situation work for us and for our guests? So that's been really difficult. I'm not going to lie. Like, it hasn't, not so much on the financial stabilities of the businesses. It's just the constant rethinking and reworking of things that you previously did, you know, that worked and were comfortable. So, you know, for instance, when the first lockdown happened, you know, we had a meeting at Enoteca and said, okay, what are the options? Okay, we'll do takeaway. Okay, how does that work? It's pickup only because we don't want, you know, delivery drivers handling our food, and we want to keep the integrity and the quality of our food. So, okay, how are we going to do that? So we had to find an app to put the menu on, and then we had to go out to people on our direct email saying, here's what we're doing, and our socials were really important. So it's a lot of work. Like, it's a, you know, that's a thing that I think, thinking about it now, the sheer volume of work was really heavy, like incredibly heavy. So any time that you got a break from not having to make a quick decision, it was a godsend. Like, so, yeah, it as I said, financially, no drama, because everyone, guests were amazing. Like, if you know, as soon as they could come back into the restaurants, they came back in really hard, and they were super appreciative of being taken care of and just being there. So that was really good. But as I was saying, just from a business owner's point of view, yeah, it was very difficult.
You've got a couple of pretty incredible venues in Brisbane. Do you have any plans in the next couple of years?
Yeah, I think I'd like to do one more. I'm 47 this year, so I think I've got one more in me. So, you know, I definitely like to do something, you know, down on the river with the new development with Dexus. I think it's a great part of Brisbane. You know, there's multiple opportunities to do something down there. So it'll be, I don't know what it is yet, but I'm sure I'll, you know, something that I'm passionate about will pop up in my head, and I'll go all guns blazing into it like I've done everything else without actually, you know. And I think, you know, that served me really well, being, you know, passionate about things. I think you're passionate about, you're driven, and you've got a real clarity on what you actually want to deliver. And I think that was actually, looking back on it now, the Rothwells thing was not easy, but it, just having clarity on, you know, what it was and what I wanted it to do and how people could use it was actually a lot easier than Enerteca, to be honest. Yeah. So, yeah, I'd like to do one more, and I think I've got three daughters, so, you know, maybe when they're a bit older. You know, there's one each of them, you know, they can choose which one they want to work in, if that's what they want to do. And so, yeah, that's, yeah, definitely one more. And I think, you know, the wine side of things for me too is kind of an unfulfilled dream that I've always had. I just always really wanted to have one great wine shop, you know, like spending a lot of time in London, like Berry Brothers and Rudd and those sort of stores always were really an inspiration to me. So maybe, you know, that's something else down the track as well. But I'm always inspired by other people. And I think, you know, not being able to travel for the last, I haven't had a real holiday for 3 years. So that, you know, being inspired by places and meeting people and that sort of thing, I think, you know, next time I go on holidays, which is at the end of June, which I'm most excited I've ever been to actually go on holiday, that maybe that'll sort of set things alight for me. So, you know, I can't wait.
Well, you got hooked on the industry a couple of decades ago now, and you've had the most incredible impact on Brisbane. What do you love about what you do?
The satisfaction of people just coming to me and saying that wine was amazing, or you know, we went to Rothwell's and we had the beef Wellington, or just that really great feedback is really humbling. And that's one thing I've really sort of taken out of the last few years is, you know, enjoy the wins and all that sort of thing, but being humble and still working really hard is important as well. I think, you know, if you get too far ahead of yourself, you can't see all those things that have actually made an impact on people, even if it's really small. I think that's really important, and that's a thing I actually really love about restaurants. I think, you know, they're places where people, you know, gather to celebrate or commiserate or whatever it is. I think that's a thing that I really missed at the start of the lockdown, that just being able to go out with friends and, you know, whatever it is that you know, the conversations that you have or the new people that you meet. I think, you know, that's why restaurants are so important to the fabric of cities. And that's, yeah, and that, honestly, that's my greatest satisfaction is, you know, if I'm in a social setting or whatever it might be and someone says, oh, what do you do? And so I, you know, own restaurants and work with wine. And they go, wow. And then you say, you know, and they say, oh, what restaurants? And so I've got Enerteca and Rothwell's. And it's like they look at you and you know, you've created fire or something. And I think you're the most amazing person. So, I've discovered fire. That I get a kick out of that. And as I said, it's really humbling and, you know, and it, like you know, you don't always get things right. But my thing is that I'm always learning, I'm inquisitive, and I always try and get better at what I do, whether that's a product or my mentality or whatever it might be. I think, you know, our guys as I said, there's a real clarity to what we do. Every decision we make is based on, you know, what's best for that guest experience. And I know it kind of sounds cliched and all that sort of stuff, but it's actually really easy to make decisions based on that. Like it's really simple, but you know, they're the sort of things that I've learnt from Phil Johnson and Andy at Echo and, you know, those sort of guys. So yeah, that's just being recognized as having a great restaurant that's given someone a really good memory. That's awesome. I think that's the best thing about it.
Well, Dan, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on Deep in the Weeds today to hear just a bit of your story. Please keep in touch and we'll have to catch up again soon.
I really appreciate you having me and thanks for listening to me rabble on because I can really rabble on sometimes. But that's great. Thanks very much. Cheers.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Stay tuned as we take a deep dive into the lives of the incredible people who ply their trade in the food and hospitality sector. Special thanks to executive producer Rob Locke for making this all happen. Follow us on Instagram at Deep in the Weeds Podcast or email us at podcast@deepintheweeds.com.au. Stay safe and be well.